Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Brady Douglas, and I'm a certified podcaster and a bona fide talk shitter on the internet, and you can't teach that. And this right here is the Noise Bleed Podcast, and it's in video form as well, and you can't teach that. Bada boom, realist guy. In your room when I come into your Google Hangout every now and then, man. How you doing? Alright, so I just got through with watching the August 15th edition of Monday Night Raw, and I thought, might as well do a podcast about it. I want to do more wrestling podcasts throughout the week, and I'm feeling pretty good about this right now. This episode was a major improvement from last week. I mean, you can really only go up from last week. I don't know what was wrong with it. The thing with SmackDown and Raw, it started off really good, and it steadily went down from there, and now we just get a little bit of an upturn in its trajectory. With SmackDown, it started looking not so promising, and it went up a little bit, and I really do enjoy that, and I think SmackDown has just gotten better since, and Raw really has to step up their game, and I am enjoying the pseudo-competition between the two shows, especially where here and there they mention, hey, Shane might appreciate somebody like Rusev a little more than Raw does. And Rusev's all like, I'm gonna go and contact Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan, and they will appreciate the talent like me. And they probably would. They would use him really well, I'm sure. Because SmackDown is making do with what they have. Having so little makes them make use of every piece on their show, and Raw hasn't always had that, but this episode was pretty good by comparison to last week, even though that doesn't say much. So let's break down the episode and see where it takes us. So we have Seth Rollins going around looking for the Demon King. I gotta put that in big quotes there, because they're really drilling that point home. I don't understand it, because he was always called the Demon. Finn Balor was always the Demon. He had the Demon stuff going on. But now they're really drawing home the Demon King, specifically. And I don't know if that's just kind of a thing they're doing for this feud specifically, or if that's just how they're repackaging the Demon, but that's kind of weird for me. I don't think it's absolutely necessary. I think just calling it the Demon was fine. Honestly, I prefer the Finn Balor we see outside of his Demon form way more than the Demon itself, but I know that's not the most popular opinion. I just think he projects so much more while in the ring when he's having an intense feud before he goes into the Demon form. Like in the last week of the feud prior to the pay-per-view, like with Samoa Joe, how he would come out and you would see everything in his eyes, you would see the emotion, you would see the rage. And you know, Finn Balor's not the best actor in the world, but his facial expressions can do a lot. But when he puts on the Demon makeup and gets all painted up, it distracts you from everything else that's going on with him. And it distracts you from the fact that he is really good at what he does. And it's kind of a shame that the gimmick kind of overshadows the talents of the man himself. And I think he is capable of doing so much more. So this episode, like last week, is heavily centered around Rusev and Roman Reigns and their feud and regarding to Lana. And I think those are some of the weaker points of the night. Not match-wise, because they did have a match there. It's just that I didn't really want to see them that much here. I mean, the promo work is great. I love Rusev, and I think Roman Reigns is getting a little more comfortable. Lana has not shown as much as I would like. I used to respect her so much more, and something about her character has been diluted, and Rusev is taking the reins No pun intended there. I'm kind of proud of that one. Yeah, Rusev is really taking the reins, controlling their little team here. And he is the one who's really bringing it when before he lost to John Cena, Lana seemed like she was more the person in control of their duo. And I really do enjoy Reigns' work in the mid-card thus far. I really don't think he's being pushed down our throats too much in that sense. A lot of people are worried about that, and I don't mind him so much in the mid-card. He seems more comfortable, even though his humor is a little bit cheesy. It's always going to be cheesy. It's wrestling. Everything they do is just, it just oozes cheese, and to a certain degree, I'm okay with that. It's weird how we have Foley showing up during the segment between them, and Foley shows up a lot during this night. Not as much Stephanie, but Foley shows up a lot, and it bothers me anytime I see management. It's really annoying, because they really try to hammer that point home that management isn't going to have as big of a role, but we still see them a lot. Maybe one or two less segments than usual, and they're not really opening the show with the big promo, and they're not talking for 15 minutes before the show starts. But the spirit is still there, where the management is constantly being used to frame the show, and every now and then I think that's fine. But what I really like in a management character is William Regal from NXT. In NXT, he doesn't show up every week. He shows up when he is needed as part of the story, when he really has to come in and regulate things, get things straight, and, I don't know, make everything make sense. When he has to regulate and make things happen when it's not blatantly obvious what direction everything is going in. So he's there kind of as a clarifying tool. But in the case of Foley and Stephanie, and honestly, SmackDown is probably even more guilty of this, and I'm very disappointed about that because they're supposed to be the one about the young stars and whatever, but that's not really how it turned out. Daniel Bryan and Shane are constantly showing up on SmackDown, and I understand they need to kill the time a little more, and maybe they need to make use of whatever talent they have, including Daniel Bryan, since he's still one of the most overacts in the company. It's still a shame, because that's not what we were promised going into the brand split. Alright, so we have Sheamus and Sami Zayn. They get into a fight over a tweet, which is lovely, I guess, whatever. It's really stupid. I hate when things like this happen. The problem is, it's part of the Cesaro-Sheamus feud. But the big issue about it is that Sami Zayn is in the middle of it. He's just kind of a tool in the Cesaro-Sheamus feud when Sami Zayn doesn't have anything for SummerSlam. He had such a good match with Kevin Owens, and they're not capitalizing on that? Come on, you can't do that. He is too good, he is on fire, and then boom, he loses all of his momentum. He misses 1 week of Raw, and now he's stuck in the middle there. He needs something to do. You can't have Sami Zayn sitting out. He has to have some sort of purpose, and if he does sit out, he at least needs to have something to build toward, but right now it just seems like he's just being used as a plot device, which is weird. I mean, I like that he beat Sheamus, but he doesn't need help from Cesaro. That just elevates the Cesaro-Sheamus feud, which Sami should have nothing to do with. Unless he's actually going to be inserted into the feud directly. I would like to see Sami Zayn feuding more directly with Cesaro. They have some passive-aggressive moments between the two, and they keep on making the point that, hey, we respect each other, but eventually I want these two to go at it with heel Cesaro. Heel Cesaro, who does not talk much, because I don't want to hear him talking. I like it when Cesaro talks every now and then. Sometimes he can nail it. but it seems like they try to force it a little too much, and it's just not organic, especially when he gets on commentary. He does not go back and forth with the announce team very well. They don't mesh with him sometimes. If he has something really real to say, he'll be able to pull it off, like with his little shoot promo that he cut after the draft. That was solid. But I think it was only solid because it was real. It's what he really feels. And I think that's what Cesaro really needs. He needs to say things that really matter to him in real life. And it's a shame because he's probably not going to get those opportunities very often. So you might as well make him a quiet character. And you might as well make him a heel. I know people want to like him, and you can still have people like him, and he does the swing and stuff, but officially on screen, I think he might want to be a heel, or even just a tweener, just somebody who's good at wrestling. He'll wrestle the faces, he'll wrestle the heels. You can cheer him if you want, or not, you know? I think Cesaro can play that middle ground where he doesn't really favor either side, he just wrestles and he wins. I think Cesaro gets over with his in-ring charisma, and depending on who he's facing, you could really have Cesaro play either side, because he works either way, being such a neutral character. I don't know. I don't really know what the long-term direction for his character would be. But in this night, we have Foley doing something that I actually really liked, booking a best of seven series between Sheamus and Cesaro, and I'm not happy about seeing these two face each other seven times, but I think the concept is cool, and they may end up adding the element of loser leaves town. I was thinking that Cesaro was confirming that he was staying on Raw when he was on the commentary team. It seemed like he was hinting towards that, but maybe if they have these two go at it and do a loser leaves sort of thing and Cesaro gets screwed and he has to leave, then he can jump to SmackDown, give them a little bit more star power to work with. He could do wonders for them, especially in the Intercontinental division. I think that would work so well. That would be great. We still have Seth Rollins running around asking about the Demon King. He runs into Neville, and later in the night he runs into Foley and Steph, and that bothers me because I'm seeing more management. I get it that there's something there between Seth and Steph, but they really don't. It just seems like it's killing time unnecessarily, and they could probably make better use of that backstage segment, and I don't know, they probably could have thrown in a Braun Strowman match in that amount of time, considering how the Braun Strowman the Braun Strowman thing has been. The build-up for Braun Strowman's character, I guess? I don't know. We have Nia Jax squashing another colorful jobber, which, that's fine. I'm okay with Braun Strowman and Nia Jax squashing jobbers for a month. I think that's fine. But going forward, they don't necessarily have to cut out the jobbers, but it would be cool if from this point on, they start sprinkling in some established talent so this doesn't become a little too repetitive. Maybe throw Braun Strowman in against, I'm trying to think of something. I mean, I was about to say Jinder Mahal, but he doesn't really fit in anything with Braun Strowman. Or just fit half of some sort of a face tag team in. Even if it's just one half of the Golden Truth against Braun Strowman. Just fit in some established names in there. That's really all you gotta do. You can still throw in the squash matches against the local jobbers here and there, and I do think those are very valuable, but you could relocate those jobbers for 1 week and maybe have them fight, I don't care who, you could have them fight Neville for all I care, and have Braun Strowman face somebody who's on the lower part of the card, but has a name, so you can at least say, hey, he's not just beating jobbers, he is beating people, though they're lower card people, he's squashing the fucking shit out of them, so that's something, you know? So my favorite segment of the night, not because of Brock Lesnar, not because of Paul Heyman, because of Heath Slater, I loved the Brock Heath and Paul segment. First of all, Paul Heyman completely belittles him. Paul Heyman's promos have become more of a, yeah, this is what we expect from him. And I think he has one of the best promos ever, if not the best promos ever, if you look at his archive. But lately it seems like, okay, same old shit. How long can you do the same old stuff and tell us Brock Lesnar is great? I think Paul Heyman is better when he's a little more inspired, and I don't think he's especially inspired. I think he's just doing what he's got to do to get to the next moment, and he understands that the feuds that Brock is in are typically shallow. It doesn't give him a lot to work with, and he has to pull a lot out of a little, and I guess he tries and does a decent job, a better job than most people would do. But let's talk about Heath Slater. He has earned so much respect from me, and I bet a lot more people out there. Heath Slater, his work on SmackDown and Raw has been some of the more entertaining segments in WWE over the past few weeks. He's been awesome. And yeah, there's the repetitive joke of, I gotta take care of my kids, my two daughters, and all those other kids I have. I have 13 kids at home. Yeah, the joke is repetitive, but I like how he comes out and faces Brock Lesnar and he says, I know you're going to kill me, but I need this. Please, just let me have this opportunity. And Brock even gets on the microphone, and he doesn't do that very often, so it's special. I think that's one of those things where Brock, he is capable of talking. I remember his old segments with Kurt Angle back in the day, and they were great. And Brock did all the talking for himself, though his talking wasn't the best parts of the segment. It's more what they did. Their actions spoke louder than their words. And he was working with Kurt Angle, as a little side note there. But I think Brock Lesnar was really good here. He picks up the mic and he's like, I respect that, your family. I have kids. And you know what? I don't give a shit about your kids. He actually, and they bleeped it. It was nice. It was, I don't give a about your kids. And they're letting Brock Lesnar curse a lot. I mean, I know they're catching it and they're censoring it, and that's fine with me. But they're really building up Brock as a guy who just doesn't care. And they're letting him really portray who Brock Lesnar probably is in real life. He doesn't care, as we know from the Dean Ambrose interview. He doesn't care. Lazy Brock Lesnar. I'm not gonna put on a good match at WrestleMania. I just want my paycheck and I'm gonna leave. I'm not gonna hit you with the barbed wire wrapped bat. No, I'm just gonna throw you around a bunch. A little bit bitter about that ever since I heard that. Now I look at Brock Lesnar, I think, yeah, his matches aren't that impressive these days, are they? Suplex City might be getting a little played out, isn't it? But Brock actually did something on Monday Night Raw, which is cool. He wasn't just there and standing there the whole time. He took an RKO, but, you know, this is the most substantial thing he did on Monday Night Raw in a while. So I think that's worth something. So Heath Slater ends up getting a little bit of a brawl with Brock Lesnar, and he actually goes out for him. It's not like Brock grabs him and just starts throwing him. No, Heath went after him. So that shows some bravery, and you can respect that from Heath Slater, even though, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Heath Slater can't do anything about it. You know he's not going to win, but you kind of want him to. And I really want Heath Slater to end up on SmackDown. I think he could do well there. But I also am okay with it if they want to draw this out a little bit. But not too long. I don't want them to wait until his segments get boring. They tend to do this stuff where they build something up a little too long. And then they finally go through it. That's like with Golden Truth. If they did it earlier, maybe they would have had a little bit of success. But they didn't really pull the trigger on that when they should have. It's like with the Shining Stars. They did the Shining Stars promo package vignette things for so long, and they didn't do anything with it, which is a shame. So we have I'm skipping over little details, things that I don't think are all that important. Earlier in the night, we had the New Day versus Dudley Boys. Didn't really matter. We had another Doc Gallows, and I kind of like that because it's Dr. Gallows, and Dr. Anderson is Doc Gallows, Dr. Gallows. It's kind of a reference. I assume they did that on purpose. And the New Day faced the Dudley Boys. New Day's win. Real easy. It was no problem at all. I honestly was half paying attention because I knew the match wouldn't be all that special and the New Day would kind of just go over. And that's fine. That's probably how it should be. What else? Did I skip anything else? We have Enzo and Cass and Jericho. That's a fine little build-up thing. Jericho and Owens have a decent chemistry between them, where Jericho seems way more into their relationship. And when they were doing their backstage interview, it seemed like they were one-upping one another. And I thought that was really cool. One of them would say something and the other one would say something. And each thing would be funnier than the last, which I think is great. We have Rusev jumping Roman in the back. The two have a match for the main event. I don't want to see it, but it ended up happening. So, whatever. It was actually a cool match, but we'll talk about that in a second. So, we have the Primetime Players reuniting. Reuniting? Is that a word? Primetime Players are back. And they face the Shining Stars. Shining Stars get the win based on a miscommunication between the Primetime Players because Bob Backlund was whispering something at Titus O'Neil. I have no idea why it didn't seem to have much of a place, and I don't really see the purpose of it at all, but that happened. They had a reunion, but I saw the reunion, and I'm like, well, this is going to turn out well, right? Because this is a long time coming. They were feuding the past couple weeks, and now they're suddenly friends? Yeah, this is going to go smoothly. Jinder Mahal comes back just to lose to Neville, but it's a solid match, so I'm not going to say that they're wasting Jinder Mahal. I think he's talented. He can put on a good match. He's got a good look to him. I think the turban is... I don't really have a problem with a wrestler wearing a turban, but I just think his... I know without it, he looks like generic good-looking wrestler, but honestly, I think the generic good-looking wrestler thing might work for Jinder Mahal. He looked like a badass when he came back with Heat Slater, and he was just in a shirt and all. He looked big. He's beefy. He looked badass as hell, and I think just when he puts the turban on, it reminds me of back when he was in 3MB, because honestly, I don't remember much about him outside of 3MB, so... What can I say? And as much as I respect all the members of 3MB at this point individually, there's nothing about that group that is all that respectable. So Seth calls out the Demon King in the ring. A fan jumps the barricade at one point in this, and Seth looks believably spooked. And I know the fan jumping the barricade was definitely not planned, but I wonder if Seth Rollins did that on purpose, where he was like, I know if you're listening to the audio version, you can't see me, but his eyes got all wide and he looked like he was surprised that he was being attacked by somebody. And that was kind of interesting, because maybe he was making us think, oh, I thought that was the demon. I thought that was the demon. I'm so glad that's not the demon. Whew, not the demon. That's great. And then the actual demon comes out, Finn Balor, in full demon paint. And I think that's cool. I understand why they want to introduce this concept to the mainstream audience, even though I think it would have a much bigger effect if they did it at the pay-per-view. Finn Balor comes out. They exchange kicks and such. Finn Balor ends up getting over on Seth Rollins. He looks good going into the pay-per-view, and I have a lot of thoughts about Finn Balor going into the pay-per-view, but I'll give you more of those thoughts later this week, probably. I'm probably going to do some predictions for SummerSlam, and during that, you will probably get my thoughts on the whole Finn Balor thing and his current trajectory on the main roster. After this, we have Charlotte very disappointed in Dana, but in the following segment, we have Charlotte versus Alicia Fox, where Charlotte wins, obviously, and Dana helps Charlotte get one up on Sasha when she comes down to the ring, and then slaps her in the figure four, does the figure eight, then goes back to the figure four. She can't really stick with the bridge, does she? She doesn't bridge up and stay there. No, she goes up, and then she goes down into the figure four. I imagine it takes a lot of strength. I've done back bridges before, but not while holding in a submission move, so maybe it's a little harder. I don't know. But they made themselves look really good going into their match for SummerSlam. They really tried to do a little bit of damage on Sasha, so I hope she's selling the leg going into it, and that would really add more drama, so I think that would be cool. Then we have Rusev versus Roman Reigns, the two competing in a match like 6 days before they're competing in another match, devalues the match that they're going to have. This one was good, but that also makes it seem a little stupid for them to be having this match here when they're having a pay-per-view match. Why give it to us now if they're doing it this weekend? That's dumb. Why did you do that? That's not smart at all. But the match was good. Lots of brawling at ringside. Rusev attacks Roman's appendages. Roman's selling is one of his weaker points, but maybe that's why they were working on it. There's no pinning Roman. That's kind of a theme that's been with Roman his whole career. There's no pinning him. You hit him with everything. You can't pin him. And that still kind of bothers me, because when you can be hit with anything, it devalues everything, which is a big problem with Roman, but I don't mind him being in the mid-card. He wins the match with the spear, and it's kind of like, oh, same old shit. But I'm kind of fine with having this dominant Roman character in the mid-card, because I think it gives a lot of people a lot of stuff to shoot for. And that was you could say the same thing would apply in the at the top of the card. But I think Roman would be a better target for a lot of these mid-card guys to really catapult themselves to the top. People like Seth should be competing with people who are really comfortable in that top role. And I don't think Roman was there yet, but I think working in the mid-card might actually get him back up there in a far more believable way. So that's my Raw recap. Those are my thoughts. I'm hopefully going to be doing more of these going into the future. I don't know if they're going to be in video form, or at least in the same fashion, if they're going to show me, or if I'm going to show gameplay footage from like 2K or something. But this was kind of a last second thing. I'm going to be doing a recap of SmackDown this week, maybe NXT, but definitely predictions later this week, and you'll see me talking about SummerSlam. That's all I got to say. Doing a lot for the podcast. Might be moving the RSS feed soon, but I'll keep you up with that when that stuff comes up, I guess, whatever. So thank you guys for listening. Check out the links in the description box below. Follow me on social media, and that's it. Thank you.